What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we got another bonus episode for you here with one of our favorite guests. Very excited to talk to him about his new book that's coming up, If Destruction Be Our Lot. It's coming out May 6th from Image Comics. The final order cutoff is April 13th. So get your orders in. We'll explain why you need to get your orders in, because the book's great, in a second. Ladies and gentlemen, Matthew Rosenberg. Matthew, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey.
Welcome back, Bergie.
We did it, guys. We did it.
Yeah. Okay. And just to establish, Pete calls you Bergie and you don't like that, and he hasn't stopped. Is that correct?
Well, here's the thing. Pete calls me Bergie. That part is true. I would say generally other people did that. Big problem. Pete does it. I kind of like it.
Wow, that's shocking and probably a lie. But let's get into this book.
You know, I'm trying to make Pete feel welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, it means a lot to me.
You're welcoming him to the podcast, and that's really nice.
Yeah, I wanted to welcome Pete to the podcast.
Well, thanks. You're all welcome to this podcast. And you
just to be clear, Pete is Matt's guest on this podcast, right?
Yeah,
now. That's the way it's always going to be.
I'm your guy's guest. Pete's my guest. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming out, Pete. Means a lot.
Hey, you say the word, I'll be there.
Yeah, appreciate that.
I'm a big fan of your work. We're all here. Let's talk about this book, if that's okay with everybody. I certainly got things off the rails, so that's my fault entirely. So this book is about a robot Abraham Lincoln at an unspecified time in the future after, it seems like, the fall of humanity and a world lived in by robots. He starts to go on a journey of the soul and the mind, even though he is robotic at heart. I don't know how much or more you necessarily want to say about it, given that it is coming out in a while. But I did want to mention about something first. This is actually co-written by Mark Elijah Rosenberg.
Yes.
Is there any relationship there, or is that just a total coincidence?
Never met him.
Found a diary.
That is my older brother. Mark is my older brother.
Oh, cool.
He's a screenwriter and director by trade. So this is his first foray into the comic arts. And I am his Sherpa and guiding him through what we do. Yeah.
Well, so why this title for the two of you? Why was this the right thing for the two of you to team up on? And just to be clear, like, is he bullying you? Like, was he like,
yeah, do we need to talk to comic? Him?
Well, yes, he's always bullying me. This is sort of just my cry for help. This is my, the book is a long,
you say that every time.
It is. It is. And no one listens. Why this book, I don't have any even vague semblance of an answer. I could try and pull something out of my butt, but we talked about making something together for a long time. He wanted to make a movie I wanted to make a comic because I'm a comics guy. I won. I don't know how that happened. And we've been working on the book for years and years, and I had this vision years ago of the robotic Abraham Lincoln from maybe he escaped from a theme park or some other legal entity that we won't talk about. Yeah, and he's wandering the earth alone. And I thought that was very funny and very sad. And that was it. I brought it to my brother and I said, I think this is an idea. And that was it. So
right on top of that, what is it about Abraham Lincoln? Is it his look? He's such a visual president, I guess. Or his words are very important, I feel like, in this book. Why is he the guy?
No real thought went into that whatsoever. it's actually very funny to me because we started with Lincoln because he's iconic and he's funny and people would recognize it and they would be like, oh, I understand, animatronic Abraham Lincoln, the most famous animatronic of all time. Like, I understand what this is. And then Abraham Lincoln comes with a whole lot of metaphorical baggage as the president of this during the Civil War. He freed the slaves as a political figure, as a cultural figure. He's on two different pieces of our money. He's on the side of a mountain. He hung out with Bill and Ted. Like, he's just this major figure of like cultural import. And then when you start doing a story that has nothing to do with any of those things, you find that there's all this metaphor built into your book that you don't want. And so you're desperately trying to get it out, which is a problem I've never had before. And we spent a long time trying to think of if we should replace him. And we talked about pretty much every recognizable figure on Earth. There was a time where we were like, do you think Elton John would sue us if we were like, it's animatronic Elton John? Wow. It was Muhammad Ali. It was Ben Franklin. It was Uncle Sam. Wow. It's been.
You're naming so many characters that bring no baggage with them versus.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's hard to find the person that everyone recognizes that doesn't, when you're like, this person is the protagonist of my story, that everyone goes, that doesn't mean anything to me. I have no thoughts.
Maybe the Mormon Wives Bachelorette would be a good choice for this.
Obviously, we talked about that. That was very close. And the Mormon Wives Bachelorette, I don't know exactly what that is, but I'm using my power of inference.
Very, very current reference is what it is.
I've been in a bunker making this comic, guys. and so that's why it's Lincoln. In the end, we decided that like we kind of love some of the metaphor and some of it works in and some of it we're subverting and he gives some speeches and yeah, it's a fun, weird bit of nonsense.
It's interesting you talk about replacing him when the title of the book is a quote from him.
Yeah, well, it probably wouldn't have been the title of the book. We weren't contractually obligated.
Yellow Brick Road or something like that.
Yeah. It could have been. No, it's probably always going to be that. Yeah, it is. But it is a Lincoln quote. He says it in the book for all those people who like to do that thing in movie theaters where they point at the screen. Mm-hmm. We do that in the book.
So the other part of the equation is you have Andy McDonald on art. The art is fantastic. And the oversized first issue, which I believe it's 48 pages, if that's correct.
That sounds right, yeah.
That sounds right. Maybe this is more of a question for him, but how much did his look for the book contribute to the writing of the book? Because the robots are so specific throughout here.
Yeah, so... We made this book really weird, partially because I had the money to do it, and so I wanted to like actually take the time to make a book in a very kind of classical way where we made a lot of it and could go back and tinker and edit, which isn't really how comics are ever made.
Sure.
And partially because of that, and partially because my brother is a screenwriter, like I said, and so he tends to think of, the old expression, like you make a movie twice, you shoot it once, and then you make it again when you edit it. His brain is very long form, and I early on in making a comic, explaining how comics work to him, I watched the fear in it creep into his eyes as I was like, yeah, we're going to be, you know, writing the fourth issue while the first issue people are reading it. And he was just terrified of this idea. And so I realized that, like, I wanted to take advantage of his skill set and what he does and sort of do something for myself and step outside my comfort zone. So we've been working on the book for like 5 years in some form or another. You know, tinkering for a long time, and everyone was doing other projects, but we are working on the 11th issue now, which is it, when you tell comic creators that, they're horrified. And Andy came in very early and was started sketching and building stuff. And I'd worked with Andy on Multiple Man at Marvel. And so I knew what he did, and that's why we brought it to him. And he's just one of the great, like, character designers, world builders working in comics today. And so he was always going to be someone who we knew that as soon as he touched it, it would change what it was. And it changed wildly because of how much we loved, you know, he's building these little robots. There's little, like, breakfast robots and little construction robots and stuff. And we just fell in love with them and wanted to explore their lives and spend time with them. And just how much of the book, like, a big idea for me of the book was just this feeling of, like, emptiness and loneliness that Lincoln has, that he's the only robot like himself left in the world. And seeing Andy just build this city that you could just be like, it's haunting, and we're just having Lincoln kind of haunt this world. It was a vision I had for the book that I kind of put away and then put back on the table when I realized that Andy is the perfect artist for it. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy that you guys have been working on this for 5 years when it's coming out now. And I'm sure everybody is like, oh, this is you responding to AI and the rise of AI, except not exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I was talking to my brother about it yesterday, and I said, you know, it's and Andy, and I said, you know, this book sort of the origin of this book is the beginning of the pandemic. I live here in New York. And, you know, when we were in lockdown, I remember, you know, just going out at 3 a.m. and walking to Times Square and just being like, there's not a human to be seen. And like, that is to me where Abraham Lincoln wandering an empty city, like, came from. And my brother was like, yeah, that's a really cool anecdote. It's not true because the book predates the pandemic. And I was like, what? And he's like, you first told me about this before the pandemic. And I was like, well, damn, it sounds nice to say. So, yes, but you know, all that stuff, like the pandemic has rolled up into it, and AI has rolled up into it, and I think the conversation about AI also is also just a conversation about, you know, the way that we're all replaced eventually, and the obsolescence of everything in our lives, from machinery to our careers and ourselves. And so that, I think, is not in some ways a new conversation. And it's just about, you know, the loss of public space and the loss of community and the loss of all these things. I'm making it sound so depressing. There's jokes in the book, I promise.
It's really funny, actually.
Yeah, I would like to just kind of jump in and just say that not only is it funny, but it's also very kind of endearing, and it immediately kind of grabs you. Like, I immediately fell in love with the Abraham Lincoln character, and as well as the bus. I was surprised at how, you know, moved I was by the bus. The problem that I'm having is you're talking about working with your brother. That would be a nightmare for me. Like, how is that dynamic? Can you talk a little bit about, like, you mentioned he's a screenwriter, and it seems like you hold him in high regard, which is nice. But how well do you guys back and forth with each other? And, like, how does that all work?
Sure. My brother's a loser.
And also, I'm having problems with my mom, so if we can get to that next. Then.
Yeah, we're going to do the whole family. First of all, that's a great question, Pete. I'm so glad to have you on the show asking stuff like that. it really means a lot. I don't remember what the question was. No, I do. The working with... Thank you for saying you care about the characters. Yes, that is the challenge when you make a book where you're like, not a lot of people in it. Humanity's extinct. You're like, man, I really hope
people... Who am I rooting for?
I really hope people like this fucking bus. my brother's... Working with my brother's funny. We have a very good relationship. We're very close. creatively, I think we're very different, which used to terrify me in making this book, that we don't really like the same stuff. We don't really we like some of the same stuff. And he's, I think, when I pointed this out to him, he was like, well, I think thematically we like the same stuff and emotionally we like the same stuff. Just the actual physical, you know, what album that is or what movie that is different. But I think if you looked at the core of them, which I don't know that I 100% agree, but like we definitely pull in different directions a lot, which, again, used to really scare me. But I've had this revelation recently looking at the Coen brothers' careers and how much I love them. And then watching, now that they're split, watching what they're doing and watching one of them make, you know, Macbeth, which is this beautiful, heavy, powerful work about, you know, character and language and mood. And the other one is making Driveway Dolls, which is like a comedy about very intense random violence and dick jokes. And I realized, I was like, oh, together, that's a Coen brothers movie. It's like all of these things. And it changed the way I think about creativity and co-writing and collaboration. Cause I was always like, you find someone who you see eye to eye with. And I was like, it's possible the Coen brothers are pulling against each other in every minute of the day. It's possible that they are just making what they make because they don't see eye to eye on everything. But yeah, we sort of embraced the differences, but also it's pretty liberating to, I've co-written a bunch of stuff. I've co-written with, you know, like Marika Tamaki and Kelly Thompson and James Tynan, Ed Brisson, Alex Pacnadel, Tyler Boss, obviously I co-write with a lot. And those relationships are always ones where I'm friends with all those people, but also you're kind of, you don't want to upset anyone. It's whatever. And it's fun to have a co-write where you're like, well, I can say whatever I want and you're still going to have to sit across from me at mom's house and have dinner. So I think we're a little less delicate with stuff. I think when something sucks, there's just an email that goes out because this sucks. Like, this isn't good. Fix it. Or I'm going to change this. I don't like it. And that cutting through all the like nicety to just be blunt has been really fun and invigorating, and I think it's made the book better too.
Were you talking about how you and your brother have different like tastes or like sort of things that you glom to with your similar emotional background? Can you give us an example, whether it's music or movies, like a favorite from you and him that would crystallize that?
I mean, in music, the easy one is that like I grew up as like a punk and hardcore kid, and just that's still sort of what I gravitate towards, and like a lot of screaming, and he's like very, very much an indie rock kid. And it's like, you know, there was a lot of times where, you know, I'd be like, come to this show. Like, you know, someone's going to get knocked unconscious. And he'd be like, come to this show. You know, the band is going to be sitting down. And I'm just like, that's sort of where we land. But no, I mean, I think, you know, I can't think of like specific, you know, I'm a big sci-fi guy and he's a big like documentary guy in a lot of ways, and like he likes sci-fi and I like documentary, but like we pull in different directions in that way, and I don't know, he told me recently that his favorite filmmaker, I don't even remember his name, was this, I believe he's Cambodian filmmaker who makes these like 4-hour films that are just sort of like stream of consciousness. And I went and watched one and it was just like, it was really good. It was like very powerful. And I was like, I don't ever need to watch one of those again. Like that's not for me. And it's his all time favorite filmmaker. And I was like, okay, that's different. Mine is Stanley Kubrick.
I want to jump back to something you said during when we were talking about the AI thing, specifically about Abraham Lincoln and the place he's in. And I'm going to throw something out at you. Maybe this is too like armchair psychologist, but just to intuit a little bit, you tell me how off base I am. At the beginning of the book, Abraham Lincoln's giving the same speech over and over again, and he's not quite sure who is listening. And presumably, at least part of it is him finding his own words, finding his own path over the course of the book. At least that's where I kind of see things going. Given that you did this a couple of years ago, which was sort of like your prime big two period, were you at all musing around the fact that like, oh, I'm kind of hitting the same things over and over again?
Wow. That's a heavy question. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when this book was conceived, I was still at Marvel, and doing stuff at Marvel that I'm proud of and I love, but I definitely did hit a point creatively. And I've had this a few times where I just needed to change everything, where I just was like, I want to be doing other things. And it's not me refuting that work or what I did there, but just like comics is a hard job to have if you don't 100% love it. It asks a lot of you. It doesn't offer that much in return in some ways. And the fans can sniff it out. Like if you're half-assing your way through a Batman run, they're going to know. And when you get there, it's terrifying. So yes, I definitely have had moments and this corresponds to the timing of some of this book that I was like, creatively, I'm not doing what I feel like I should be doing. And like, I'm scared of getting into a rut. I don't know that I did creatively get into a rut at any point. Maybe I do know that, but, it wasn't a come to Jesus moment or anything, but I definitely, yes, I think that this in some ways is a fear of stagnation and a fear of just, you know, look, it's a midlife crisis book. It's a it's a fear about the world around us book in a lot of ways, but also, it's a love letter to the Hall of Presidents. So, like, it's got a little of everything.
And it is another coincidence that I was going to mention is it's coming out right after your other robot book, which is We're Taking Everyone Down With Us. Obviously, they're very different.
Yeah. I had a prepackaged answer for why this was happening, but I've already blown that out of the water. I talked a lot about how, like, and this is true that like when I make a book, I spend so much time thinking about it and the world that whenever I finish it, I feel like I have so much more to say than when I said. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I kind of want to say a different thing than what I said about that. Or like, you know, it's the old like you can't stand in the same river twice idea that like when I finish a book, I'm a different person than I was when I started it. So the book doesn't mean the same thing to me. And so I have more to say. And I think that is true in some ways. A lot of that is in this book. But this book also predates We're Taking Everyone Down With Us. So that part of it is, you know, theater that I'm like, this is a response to that book. It's not really a response to that book, but it's part of the same conversation in my head, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
It's interesting. I mean, we read a lot of books, we read a lot of number ones, and a lot of them are sort of like, in this world, the zombies eat werewolves. And then the story continues.
What book is that? What book is that? That sounds great.
It's something we're all working on, though.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
But it feels like this book, there obviously is like a premise and a world you're getting into, but it feels like the aim is the feeling, or there's a deeper aim to it. Like reading, I was really struck by like, like Pete was saying, I'm feeling first, and then I'm getting into sort of the specifics of the premise world. And I'm curious sort of if that was your intention at first, and if the collaboration you had with your brother and sort of this new working style you have on this book contributed to that.
Yeah, these are really good questions. You guys are good at this. I just want to stop. I don't know. Yeah, I just want to say you guys are really good at this. I know I come on a lot, and but I appreciate it. But yeah, I think in some ways, this is an ongoing book, and I think a lot of it is like the idea of, well, how do you maximize an ongoing book? How do you take advantage of that medium? It's a very precious thing to be able to be like, we're doing this for a long time. There's not a lot of things that do that. Most TV shows you watch, don't know. Well, I'm getting three seasons, so this is the story I'm going to unfold in three seasons. It's all sort of built haphazardly, and we're not doing that. So in some ways, it's a response to that, but also to try to just like take full advantage of what doing, you know, the dumbest version of our book could be. But also, yeah, I love mood and I love tone, and that's something we wanted to explore. But also, I just like, it's an adventure book. It's an epic. It's an odyssey. And like, those are not, you know, in some ways, like, we have this idea. Lincoln is trying to find a purpose. When you read the first issue, you're going to know at the end, like, Lincoln is searching for something that he believes is out in the world that he doesn't have, that he doesn't find. And you'll read it and you'll get that. But more than that, like, I think about a lot of comics I grew up reading that were these kind of epic stories that weren't just like a movie pitch or a high concept or a log line. They were just this idea. And I think about stuff like Concrete or ElfQuest or Love and Rockets. Like, they're just not books that we make today very much. Yeah. And that's sort of what I wanted to recreate. And like, I don't think the audience particularly wants that these days. I think we're like in a TikTok world where we're like, you know, why do we need six issues? You could do it on page five and get it done. And I have a love for that too. I have a love for the, like, you know, whatever the meme that's going around, like water skiing Dracula, of just like, get it done and show it on the first page. And yes, 100%. I completely agree with that. That is a great meal to sit down and have, but so is the 9-course thing that we're preparing. And so, like, yeah, we just wanted to make an epic journey where, like, you know where he's going, but like, you know where Lincoln is headed, but mostly you're there to just be with him on the road and find the things he finds and see what he discovers. And so that is creatively a little different. And I think kind of what you're feeling.
Yeah. I mean, Concrete is such a good comp for the way I feel like I don't think about it. That book is not like in the consciousness right now. And sure, it is that same thing where it's like sort of feeling first, and the sci-fi supports the idea of what the character's feeling and what I'm feeling. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The feeling, my takeaway of obsolescence and like, uh-oh, what are we doing? And I don't want to spoil anything for anyone else's feelings reading this, but man, it stuck with me. It fucked me up. You've already fucked me up today.
Well, that means a lot to me. That was my goal when I designed this. I was like, I'm going after Justin on this one.
Yeah, I've gotten Pete enough. No. I got to shift the target.
Yeah, yeah. I hope Pete was not at all affected by the book. This was to protect Pete and insulate Pete.
Thank you. Yeah. So far, so good, man. I'm loving it.
Yeah. And he's like, I
appreciate
the bus.
I appreciate the comment about the good questions, because the next question I had written down is, did you think about using Abraham Lincoln?
I mean, again, yes. These are good questions. This is the kind of stuff that other people don't ask you. No.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's never come up before.
All right, now it has. There you go.
Doesn't mean it's not going to be an issue 12. But
coming soon.
Can't wait.
Right now, no. No Abraham Lincoln for us.
Too bad. I did want to ask you about something else while we had you on. This is a big thing that came out a couple of weeks ago. You're not exactly taking over the entire Spawn universe, but you are taking over Spawn and King Spawn and having them interact. I have heard good, exciting things about your run, just the scuttlebutt around the way. What can you tease about that? What's your take on Spawn? What, given that you are busy, given that you are doing so much stuff, what drew you in to Todd McFarlane's world?
Todd called me. I keep saying, like, when Todd calls, you answer. And that's really what happened, is that I hit a point, I was working at DC and having a really good time, and I was making DC vs. Vampires and doing some other stuff, and we were talking about doing new stuff, and I was really enjoying it. And then I have a movie coming out this year. I had a bunch of stuff I wanted to do, and this was coming together, and I didn't know how We're Taking Everyone Down With Us was going to go. And then it went really well, and like, people liked it and it sold well. And so I hit a point where I was like, I think I just need to be in that space. I need to be making my own stuff. And I had a friendly, a couple of friendly talks with DC where I said, I have more to say here. I would love to come back. I just need a little time to sort of go down this path. And they're very understanding. They're, you could not ask for a company that was more enthusiastic about creators and them making the things they want to make. So I stepped away from DC and was fully going to just be doing my own stuff. And then I got an email from Todd's assistant that said, Todd McFarlane wants to call you. And I spent a full day being like, why does he want to call me? For some reason in my head, and I don't really have an answer, my thought was, oh, he wants to call me to talk about toys. And I was just like, he's calling me about toys.
And a reasonable thing to think. Yeah.
He has that a toy company.
Action figure. It's coming.
I get one.
Being a toy. That.
I didn't know, like, he made a lot of DC vs. Vampires figures at the company. They made 8 figures. And I was like, maybe they're trying to make more. And then I was like, that doesn't make sense. They're not trying to make toys of, like, he doesn't need to ask me. And then I was like, oh, maybe he saw the 4 Kids Walk Into a Bank movie announcement. He wants to make toys of the movie. And I was like, that could be cool. And then I hit a point right before he called where I was like, that's not why he's calling. What the hell's wrong with me? And I was like, obviously he's calling to talk to me about baseball. But that wasn't true. And so I went in and was like, well, I'm gonna ask for Sam and Twitch. Like, whatever he's gonna say, I'm gonna be like, I need Sam and Twitch. Like, I love Sam and Twitch because I'm a longtime Spawn fan and I love the universe.
Sam and Twitch is great, man. Hell yeah.
Sam and Twitch is great. Sam and Twitch are great characters. And so I got on the call and then it became very clear 1.5 minutes in that he wanted me to write Spawn or King Spawn. There was a great moment on the call where I was like, can I use Sam and Twitch if I take over Spawn? And he was like, you can use whatever you want. You're the writer on Spawn. Like, you can use the Spawn characters, any of them. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. So I almost tipped my hand that I was trying to, shoot way lower than he thought.
But, downgrading yourself.
But, it's a call you don't refuse and it's an offer you can't refuse. Like, it's such an honor and a privilege, and what that book means to me and means to people is so much. But I, all credit to Todd. He is, one of the most charismatic, exciting, fascinating people I've ever met in my life. And we spent, dozens and dozens of hours on the phone talking about this stuff and emailing and all this stuff going over. And early on, I sent him my take on Spawn and he wrote back wildly unenthusiastic about it and was just like, yeah, I just don't think this is it. And he said, let's jump on the phone. And so we got on the phone and he said, this feels like you're trying to write like me. And I said, well, yeah, it's your book. You've set the tone for it for 30 plus years. Like, I'm trying to make it fit. And he said, if I wanted a Spawn book that read like me, I'd just keep writing it. And that was a revelation. That was, I think that all the time, especially if you're working in corporate comics, like, you're hired and they want to take you and fit you into a hole.
Right.
And Todd was like, make the hole your shape. And that changed everything. And I came back, I said, okay, give me a few days. And I came back with a totally crazy thing and I sent it to him and he was like, yes, this is exactly what we should be doing. This is like the big swing. Wow. He's like, I want it to feel completely different. And so what I can say about it, I start in Spawn 375, which is May. I have a 5-page story, which sets up what's going to be happening. It feels like a very small story, but it's literally everything that's going to be happening in Spawn and King Spawn. And then in May I'm on Spawn King Spawn 55, and in June I start Spawn 376, and then every month I'm on both.
Wow.
They are both standalone books. They can be read standalone. They are stories that are going to exist on their own. They're better if you read both. There's a conversation between the two of them, but basically the big idea is that we're jumping forward a year in time. So everything has changed. The world is completely different for reasons you're going to figure out slowly. Spawn is very different for reasons you're going to figure out slowly. And we're bringing in a new cast of characters who you're going to meet, who are trying to navigate this world and navigate why things are as bad as they are and why Spawn is the way he is. And basically the my whole pitch to Todd was, I want to make something that if you've never read Spawn before, whether you're have been Spawn curious the whole time or you don't care about Spawn at all and you are just a fan of mine and are like, oh, that you can read it from day one and you're on the same footing as everyone else. All you need to know is there was a guy named Spawn. Like, but if you're a fan, if you're a longtime fan, we're not resetting anything. We're not throwing out continuity. There's a year time jump and we're going to slowly explain what happened in that year. And so as you, those pieces will be more familiar to people who've read all 375 issues of Spawn and every issue of King Spawn and Medieval Spawn and The Scorched and Gunslinger and all those. Like, you're going to see, it's going to make a lot of sense and you're going to see that, like, oh, this is how the universe came to be this way. And for the readers who are new to it, that's all going to be new to you. And my goal, if I do my job right, a lot of new people are going to check it out and be like, oh, I love this. I want to go back and buy all the compendiums and read all the old stuff and see where this came from. Cool. And a lot of longtime fans will be like, oh, I've never seen this before, but it makes sense. That's my goal.
Wow. I cannot wait to read Spawn now. This is very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I love Spawn. Spawn is truly a like crazy, could only be a comic in the best possible way. And like, there are a bunch of, you know, I'm just rereading everything and going over everything. And every fifth issue is something that you've just like never seen before in a comic and never will see again. And it's kind of awesome. And so we're trying to bring that energy, but also, the two books, King Spawn is more horrifying. It's more of a horror book, and Spawn is going to be more of a traditional superhero book in a lot of ways. But it's the same guy at the same time, and why that exists, the divide between the two books, is sort of a driving factor. And then all of this is working towards issue 400 of Spawn. If people are buying it and I haven't been fired, and issue 400 is this big, we're shaking up again and have this big thing we're building towards, which is going to change everything again.
Everybody has their own favorite Spawn character, whether it's Spawn or one of the supporting cast members. Like you said, yours is Sam on Twitch. I'm wondering if my favorite character is going to be back. Are we going to see the countdown clock?
Yes.
Character.
Oh, really?
100% yes.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a little different, but the countdown clock will be back. Not in the first issue. In the first issue. It takes a little bit because there's some stuff that needs to be established. But yes, the countdown clock is very much back. What's funny is that I thought, and maybe this is a prejudice against you guys, being that I only interact with you as three talking heads in boxes, but people keep talking about the news anchors of just like that, that they're every issue, a lot of issues have three news people talking and they will also be back in some form. Wow. So I thought that's where we're going. Yeah. There's a lot of old stuff coming back. Yeah.
Can I admit something? I was like, haha, I'll do a funny joke about the countdown clock being back. Isn't that dumb? And then you said it's back and I got excited.
Yeah, exactly. we saw you. You're glowing right now. Is your favorite character.
I mean, that's the point of Spawn, is that there's a lot of stuff that you're like, that's crazy. Would that happen? And then when it does, you're like, that was great. That was awesome. Todd is the best at like building something that feels absurd. And then you are just in love with it instantly. And I love that. And so
have nostalgia for something where you're like, this is just a bunch of numbers that didn't make a ton of sense when I read them the first time.
Yes.
And now I'm like, oh, I do need to see those again.
Yes. Yeah. They're going to be, we're going to do a whole issue that's just focused on the countdown clock. And it's just his point of view and how sad the countdown clock is as it wanders. No, it's not true, but it is back. It is definitely back.
And I mean, this is just not to be your boss or anything, but I'm a little worried about your time schedule with writing two different Spawn series. You've also got If Destruction Be Our Lot. You also have the sequel to We're Taking Everyone Down With Us is coming. Plus, you have the movie. This is a busy year. So how are you handling it all?
That's a great question. Very poorly. Very, very poorly.
Really good.
Yeah. Some days I don't go outside. those are fine. I had to set my alarm clock to be here to tape this because I was up all night.
Oh, man.
So that's no, I'm fine. The workload is a lot right now. But I'm genuinely excited about everything I'm working on, which is, you know, obviously such a privilege, and I wouldn't trade anything. There's never a point where I'm like, well, I wish I wasn't doing that, or I wish I quit that. Like there's a few things that I've had to turn down that I was like, I wish I could do that. And I couldn't, but, yeah, I'm okay. Thank you, boss. I'm doing all right.
Not to talk about more work, but now that your brother has come over to your side of the business and you have dipped into the movie business, are you going to dip inside of his business with him in the future?
What a weird way to say that.
Yeah, that's a weird way to say that.
There's a lot
of
dip.
Dip.
A lot
of... You know, we actually, what's funny is that when we started building up Destruction Beer a lot, our idea was that we would get it going as a comic and then maybe branch off, and he would work on the screenplay and I would support him, and I would work on the comic and he would support me. And very early on we were like, well, this is my brother, you know, he's made feature films and he's made TV shows, but they're tend to be on the smaller scale, and this is a pretty big endeavor. This is you know,
big budge.
Yeah, we're looking at well over $100 million to make it in the way we'd think. And my brother just very early was like, I feel like we're pulling punches in the book to try and make a potential movie make more sense. We're trying to like lower the scale. And he just very, you know, early days, I said, the thing you have to realize about making a book is that it costs the same amount of money to have a guy in a coffee shop talking to himself as it does to blow up the moon. And he really was, we weren't taking advantage of that. And so at a certain point, he was like, hey, let's just blow up the moon here. Like, let's not think about a movie. And that restructured a bunch of things early on. It was before we had art, but it was Andy was doing designs and stuff. And we were just like, no, let's blow it. Like, there was a version of this book where all of the robots kind of were like, the language we kept talking about was little kids who make robot costumes and out of cardboard boxes. That like that was the feel of everything. That
castable.
Was like,
castable roles.
Yeah, that we'd like, you know, kind of Spike Jones it and be like, you could make this with cardboard, and that's part of the aesthetic. And there is a version of that that I really love, but we stepped away from it. I love movies. I'm a huge movie nerd. I'm not going to say no, I won't sit down and write a movie at some point, but my first love is always comics. And while comics are keeping me as excited as I am, like, I'm going to just be making comics.
Nice.
Cool. Well, we are very happy to have you again. For anybody listening out there, If Destruction Be Our Lot, number one, is out May 6th from Image Comics, but final order cutoff is April 13th. So definitely let your comic book shops know you want to order it. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. Before we let you go, anything else you want to plug? We've obviously talked about a lot of stuff.
I had a really good hot dog in LA. Had like the best hot dog I've ever had in my life. Like
in LA. So this is a while ago. Like how often?
No. I was just in LA. I was in LA a month ago. LA has been existing for a long time, so I can go there when I want.
Still there. Reports are. It's still there.
It's still there. And I just want to talk about that for a second because I went to I'm a burger guy by nature.
Nice.
So I went to this place, Amboy Quality Meats, and I went for the burger. And right before I went, I saw some food influencer be like, everyone sleeps on the hot dog at this place. And I was like, I'm just going to buy the hot dog just to see what he's talking about. And so I can laugh at this influencer. And he was right. It was the best hot dog. Like, I couldn't tell you what the second best hot dog I've ever had in my life was. It's all just kind of well, I like I like a hot dog from a cart. I like Grace Papaya. I like, you know, I like going to Chicago to hot dog. This was unequivocally the best hot dog. Like it changed my, so I want to plug that. Go to Amboy Quality Meats, get the chili cheese dog.
Nice.
That's maybe the best chili
I've
ever had.
Chili cheese.
I was gonna say the chili has to be the star there.
Yeah.
To have a hot
what
dog
kind of
last
cheese,
in your memory.
What kind of cheese was on it?
Look,
was it
just look, like the cheese was like buried on the chili? I don't even know. Like it was like a textural experience. I don't know what it was. I at one point was like, I was like, is this like a provolone or like a mozzarella maybe? It was like, it was not like a cheese whiz. It was something more subtle and good. But yeah, man, you don't want something like a whiz because the flavor of the hot dog, the texture, the chili had a little kick. Yeah. So that's basically what I'm trying to promote. That's why I wanted to come on the show.
Well, I would like to quickly just promote you and just say thank you. I don't know what it all takes for the work that you put in, but man, it is whenever I see your name on a comic book, I get very excited and you bring it, man. So I just want to take a moment and thank you for what you bring to comics because it makes the world a better place. So thanks, man.
That's why I had you on the show, Pete. I love it.
And if Pete just promoted him, then he's above you now, Alex. So congrats. You're not the boss anymore.
Yeah. That's fine. I have finally time to go try that hot dog. So
go get it. You should all do it. We should all go on a field trip and get this hot dog.
I would love to.
And break.
Meet you there.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.